Hello and welcome to Fade Out, the podcast that examines the final films of Hollywood's brightest lights. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, Rob Kelly. Our subject this month is actor George Sanders. Born in 1906 in St. Petersburg, Russia, the Sanders family emigrated to Great Britain at the outset of the Russian Revolution. During the Great Depression, Sanders worked at an advertising agency where the company's secretary, aspiring actress Greer Garson, suggested Sanders take up acting. After working on the stage in England for a few years, 20th Century Fox tapped Sanders to appear in 1936's Lloyd's of London as the villain playing opposite rising star Tyrone Power. The film was a big hit, and Fox promptly signed Sanders to a seven-year contract. Not too long after, RKO tapped him to play Simon Templar's The Saint in a series of B-films. During these years, he appeared in Alfred Hitchcock's first American film, Rebecca. RKO canceled its Saint series and replaced it with The Falcon, another detective again played by Sanders. Tired of appearing in B-programmers, Sanders left that series after four films, replaced by his brother, actor Tom Conway. Sanders continued to toggle between lead and supporting parts in numerous films, winning an Oscar for Best Supporting Actor for his turn as the acidic theater critic Addison DeWitt in 1950's All About Eve. He went to Italy to co-star with Ingrid Bergman in 1954's Journey to Italy. Despite its failure at the box office, it was enormously influential and is considered the impetus for the French New Wave. He worked one last time with Tyrone Power in 1959's Solomon and Sheba, who unfortunately died soon into production. Sanders appeared in another iconic film, 1960's Village of the Damned, the first of many genre films he would appear in during the final phase of his career. His mellifluous, somewhat threatening voice was perfect as Shere Khan in 1967's The Jungle Book, and played four roles in the Sonny and Cher musical comedy Good Times, which is the first film directed by William Friedkin. He announced his retirement in 1969, only to appear in drag in John Huston's 1970 spy thriller The Kremlin Letter. He showed up briefly in the 1970 sci-fi horror film Doomwatch, then in the 1972 Agatha Christie mystery Endless Night. He got top billing in 1973's hippie biker horror movie Psychomania, but before its release, Sanders would check into a hotel in Barcelona and commit suicide, making it his final film. Here with me to discuss Psychomania and the career of George Sanders is senior curator at the Des Moines Art Center and board member, Des Moines Film Varsity Theater, Laura Burkhalter. Hi, Laura.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
So before we start, we get to any of the films that we're going to talk about, especially Psychomania, aka The Death Wheelers. Why George Sanders? Because I'll stop asking. Why George Sanders?
Well, there's sort of a personal reason and then maybe a more intellectual reason. The first reason I think is I just have a weakness for sort of those people who are they a villain or are they good, but sort of naturally, you know, your Vincent Prices, your George Sanders is another one that sort of very intelligent movie presence who's going to have all the great quips and who's going to dress really elegantly and, you know, probably is going to turn out to be the bad guy at the end, but he's going to be really fun to watch until you get there. But in thinking about that more intellectually, I think what appeals to me about that is maybe not just me being twisted, but also that's not a masculine archetype that you really see anymore. Like it exists within sort of the studio system past or certain genres of movie, but I was trying to think of like who might be an equivalent and I had a really hard time because it really is just representative of this, you know, sometimes it's actually kind of queer coded, but this type of man that is usually very cultured in, you know, he plays a lot of movies where he's involved in the arts or he's aristocracy, but it is also sometimes threatening or dangerous too. And I think that complexity is interesting to me. And it feels so much of classic film, which I am just a sucker for in general.
When I asked you to do the show and I said, who do you want to talk about? And you said George Sanders. I was like, wow, that's a deep cut. Because now, obviously, the people who listen to the show are people that enjoy deep cuts. So a lot of them will probably be familiar with George Sanders. But nevertheless, he was never, even though he headlined some movies, and we will talk about some of the movies that he headlined, and he won an Oscar. I mentioned that in the intro. He was never like a big star. He was always like usually third build, fourth build. But it's kind of funny that you mention the kind of space that he took up in the Hollywood firmament, like a Vincent Price, in that and I sort of this sort of came to me as I was watching some of his older films, was that, yeah, there is no real lane anymore for his kind of persona, right? Now, I mean, he played different parts throughout the film, but in a lot of his movies, he always has that sort of resting bitch face kind of thing, right? He
He's
always
playing George Sanders in a lot of
he's
his
playing George Santa.
movies.
He looks like he hates everyone that he's having to deal with. And he, of course, that voice, right, was unbelievable. It was, as I mentioned in the intro, it was mellifluous, but it was threatening. And you got the sense that he just looked at everybody as like, I can't believe I have to deal with all these idiots. And from what I read about the man himself, that was sort of his persona in real life, was he kind of went through life like, I can't stand any of you.
That's true. But he also, managed to marry two of the Gabor sisters.
Two of the
So
Gabor
who
sisters.
knows what was going on? I mean, obviously, I like that sort of colorful life as well. I mean, it's really, there is just something very like, not only Hollywood, but even sort of, go it theatrical and glamorous in a way that doesn't, particularly for actors, for male actors. Now, but I do think the voice is a big thing too. I mean, if I, if I'm being honest, probably the first George Sanders movie I ever saw was The Jungle Book when those Disney movies were reissued in the early 80s. And what, I can absolutely remember my mom taking us to see The Jungle Book and Robin Hood and all those movies in the theaters. And those movies are all populated by these amazing old Hollywood voice actors. And I so probably that sort of, being a crazy cat lady too, that Shere Khan voice probably imprinted on my brain. And just then when I heard it again as an adult and, watched enough films to associate with who it was, it's definitely a huge part of his presence on screen.
Yeah, I mean, if you kind of go through his filmography and you don't necessarily have a context, you could say, well, God, he's kind of the same thing from film to film. But you have to remember that this was an era when Hollywood, the major studios were cranking out what, 100 movies each studio was cranking out 100 movies a year, maybe even more. And there was so that you just needed a guy or a woman who could do that thing. Right,
I mean,
whatever that thing was,
Cary
they
Grant did that too, but we don't care because it's
right,
Cary
exactly, yeah,
Grant.
exactly, right. Yeah, Cary Grant never played like a real, excuse my language, like a real shit, like Sanders does in Death of a Scoundrel. He could never do that, but George Sanders could easily, right? And reading a little bit about him in his daily, in his real life, and I, like I, the idea that like he was in these Falcon movies, and he
Which are
just
fun. They're so
they're
fun.
really fun because I really wanted to watch one just for the sake of context. Like, oh, what was he like as the hero? But the idea that he would give up on them and hand them to his brother, it just seems so kind of like, I don't know, maybe my brother could do it. Like, it just seems kind of like
And his brother
whatever.
has a very similar voice
Yes,
and a very, I mean, I Cat People is one of my
Cat, right?
all-time
Get all the
favorite
Val Lewton
movies.
movies, right?
Yeah, and I didn't know that they were brothers until later, but that, I mean, you could slot George Sanders into as that doctor in Cat People and it would be, just as perfect as it is.
Right.
But I think I the first time I watched one of those Falcon movies, I ended up watching a lot of them too because he is still playing it like he's, there's these women all over the place and he's, appears to be doing something bad before he's sort of the hero in the end. And I those are definitely ones that I think if you are a fan of classic film, they're not as well known, but they're just a blast on like a Sunday morning to run. And the Tom Conway ones are fun too, but you can just kind of keep going.
Yeah. First of all, they're like 62 minutes, right? Because
Yes. Yeah.
they were meant to be the B programmer, movies. The run is the second half of a double feature. So they're basically like a, television show. They're half the length of an episode of Stranger Things at this point, and or even less than that. And one of the things I watched, the one I watched was The Falcon Takes Over. That's the one I watched. And I had this observation when I was watching it, and I've had this with other films, but like, and I pointed it out to my wife because she was kind of watching over my shoulder, kind of going, what is this thing? What is the thing? And I said to her, because like The Falcon Takes Over, right? It's obviously shot on a shoestring budget, and George Sanders is the only name actor in it. You can recognize some of the other actors as character guys, but there's no other stars in it. But like, it's beautifully lit and the sets are gorgeous. And I realized that it was like, well, because this was made by a studio, there's like a level of quality on just the technical level that these things are not going to fall below. Because the
Absolutely.
guys that made this, the men and women who made these movies, this was probably for these crew. For the crew, probably the 300th movie they had made, right? So they knew how to light things, how to set things. And so even something as cheap as this, a little B programmer mystery where a lot of the guys say the word moita, they don't say murder, they go moita, but yet it looks, I don't want to be like, get off of my lawn, but it looks better than a lot of like Netflix movies that cost $200 million
It
because.
absolutely does. And it's they still have access to that studio wardrobe. They
Right,
have
right,
access to
right.
the back lot, the same back lot, and yeah, the same talent behind the scenes, because those people are contract workers. And so I do think there is a just yeah, a level of quality that exists regardless of even a bad, they've got a bad script or something like that. There is something that's worth looking at.
Yeah. It's really quite amazing to see like the amount of work that went into like such a simple shot. It was like somebody running down an alley and you're like, that probably like took 10 people to do all that. And it was seen on film for 10 seconds for a movie that was meant to just be completely disposable. It's sort of remarkable. So it was really fun watching him kind of be the hero. And even that, he just kind of looks at everybody like, I can't believe I'm with you morons. He just has that look to him. It's kind of amazing. So, okay. So what is we'll start kind of in the early part of it. We're going to go through a couple of his films before we get to the Death Wheelers, AKA Psychomania. What's an early one of his that you would like to talk about?
I mean, Rebecca is, I'm a huge Hitchcock fan. I've taught a class about Hitchcock. With my work in the art world, there's so much influence of that. I mean, Rebecca is definitely a movie that I just adore. It would probably be in my personal top 10, and he's in that. But Hitchcock also, I think, knew what to do with him.
Because he's in Foreign Correspondent as well,
Which
right?
is also really that's a rare heroic role. That's a really good movie. I think Hitchcock, he was also droll, and that you sort of have a similar wit. He sort of, in some ways, often feels like this. That dark sense of humor, even in something that's more gothic and romantic like Rebecca, that he drops in and just sort of shakes everything up. He's so different than everybody else in the movie. And we don't ever meet Rebecca. We only hear about her. But if this is, this is the person she was carrying on with, it sort of puts us on the side of the heroine, knowing that, well, if he's this sort of like over the top and predatory, then it allows us to see Rebecca in a certain way. And it's just, I really love the way he's used in that movie. That movie is so much about these sort of different characters poking and prodding each other and having different motivations. And I think that's kind of the early movies. That's one that I love. And then I, as I told you, I also love Lured with Lucille
Lured.
Ball. I think that movie is an absolute blast. I think Lucy and George Sanders have like amazing hot chemistry in this movie. Like surprisingly, like sexy film noir. She's so funny, and she really stay. They make a great comedic. She's smarter than he is in that movie, and he kind of seems very, tickled by that, the way her character is written. I think that they make a fun match. It's a light noir. It's a little creepy in a couple parts, but it's not too dark. And I just, the backdrop of sort of this American girl being in London, I love that movie. I think it's one of them, a really a hidden gem. And if you like Lucille Ball too, you're just like, what? She was this like fun, sassy, dame, and all of these great British character actors are in the movie as well. I think I wish after seeing that, I was like, I wish he had done more sort of like romantic leads, because I buy it when I watch that movie.
That movie is like Turner Classic Movies Mad Libs because
Yes,
the cast is like Lucille Ball, George Sanders, Boris Karloff,
it
George Zucko, and you're kind of like, What did any of them have to talk about with each other, like around the craft services table, right? Like,
Yeah.
what would, like, you wait, wait a minute. Lucy was in a movie with Boris Karloff and George Sanders. It's like it,
Yeah.
and she's,
And it's a serial killer
it's a serial
movie.
killer movie. It's also known as Personal Column, I think, which is,
Yeah.
I, that sounds more like a romance, but lured is just a
That's,
tough word to say. Like, lured, like,
yeah, and
what? What is that? It's another, so
it
neither
doesn't
title is
quite,
great.
yeah, it's not a good title, and it doesn't really, it even when you read the description, I think a lot of the descriptions they call Nora, it's funny. Like they're
Yeah.
really funny
She's
together.
very funny. Lucy's very funny in it.
Yeah, but in a different way than I think. I mean, we obviously we know Lucy's funny, but like she's more of this sort of wise, she's not the Daffy Lucy
She's kind
housewife.
of like Fletch. You know,
Yes.
she's like Chevy Chase and Fletch, where she's sort of side commenting on the mystery that she's
Yeah.
embroiled in. She's kind of standing off to the side and sort of mocking it a little bit, you
Exactly. And
know?
she it works really well with him being this sort of know-it-all rich guy who thinks that, he's above everything and that he's gonna, he's just gonna sweep her off her feet or whatever. And I think it's a smart take on the noir that I can't think of anything else that's sort of exactly like it.
It's definitely unusual. It's definitely not, I'm glad I finally saw it. I had heard of it. And then when I saw that George Sanders was in, I was like, okay, this is a perfect excuse to watch it. And it is. And George Sucho's the hero, which is, again, that's unusual, right? He
Yeah.
usually isn't the hero in these things.
Well, and Boris Karloff is just sort of there, like you think
Yeah.
there's, but I'm happy to see him. I'm happy to
I
see him.
love him. He shows up, he via a personal column, he shows up and you're like, yeah, you're on a foggy London street and Boris Karloff shows up. You're like, I'm gonna get murdered. Like, what are we doing here? Yeah, that one is a lot of fun. I finally took the opportunity to watch The Ghost of Mrs. Muir. I had never seen that. Even though it's kind of like a famous movie and it's got Gene Tierney in it. I don't know. I just hadn't, and Rex Harrison, I just had never seen it. And I enjoyed it thoroughly. Now, George Sanders, third billed in it. And again, he plays another jerk who comes in. And it's kind of funny. You mentioned about the whole like queer coding thing. Is that if you took a lot of the characters George Sanders played and put him in a movie now, it would totally read as, oh,
Absolutely.
he's supposed to be gay. You wouldn't even have to act like they're trying to hide it, right?
Absolutely.
Or, you know.
Absolutely.
But back then it was like, no. That was code for sophisticated, you know, and he basically, you know, he's a children's author, which is so, it's like the least children's authory person imaginable.
Yeah,
George
that's a
Sanders.
stretch.
These children I write the books for. But I mean, he kind of bamboozles Jean Tierney, even though she's fallen in love with this ghost. And that's actually a really terrific movie. And he's fun in it, but man, again, he's such an a-hole in
I
the
mean, and
movie.
it's such a wildly romantic movie. I think that, no one is ever going to remember anything other than this sort of just fun and gorgeous love story between, this woman and this ghost. And so it's one that I don't necessarily associate with him as much as even though it is like a classic. I mean, obviously everyone I think thinks about All About Eve first with him. And All About Eve is amazing, and everything is that can be said probably about that movie has been said, and everybody in that movie is amazing. And I will say though, as somebody who's seen All About Eve dozens of times, I like the scene with him and Marilyn Monroe again is so funny. Like they are so funny together because they do sort of play the again opposite sort of pillars. And it's just that the dinner party scene is great and everyone focuses, I think, on fasten your seatbelts. But the whole sort of like him and Marilyn, I laugh every time.
That's another one is where, like, you know, they made the studio made 100 movies a year. So, like, he would do, you know, he probably did 10 movies where he was playing that kind of part and those movies came and went. But then he lands in this one and it's the perfect thing, right? Because it's directed by Joseph Mankiewicz and it's Bette Davis and Ann Baxter and Marilyn, Thelma, my favorite, Thelma Ritter. Like, it's kind of like he just keeps going through the same rhythm and then boom, lands in one that's like, oh no, all the stars are aligning. And again, he goes and he wins an Oscar for it.
Yeah, which deserved, I think. It's he is, again, and also is quite threatening towards Ann Baxter at the end of that too. I think I'm always kind of, again, I've seen it a million times, but I'm always sort of surprised by like how threatening he is with her at the end because he's sort of seemed above everything up until that point.
I watch the anytime somebody has wins an Oscar, I try and find the YouTube clip of it because I,
Oh, they're so
sometimes I
funny.
like to find the audio. And it's very strange in that he wins and he doesn't give a speech. He gets up on stage, he gets handed the Oscar, and he walks off stage, and that's
I mean,
it.
that's, some people didn't always, I think, as much as they do now,
Yeah.
but I just read that sort of fairly recent book about the history of the Oscars. And it was really revealing and sort of putting together the Oscars as another part of Hollywood history and how they're reflecting, the politics of the time and the politics of Hollywood and actors' reputations and, the who gets an Oscar and who doesn't. And it's a really great read
Was that the
for,
Oscar Wars? Was that that
yes,
book? Okay, yeah, I read that too. That's a terrific book. Yeah. But I wanted to get a clip of him to hear him talk, and then he just gets off. I'm like, oh,
Just
okay.
gets
Well,
up and goes.
all right, okay. So have you seen, did you watch Death of a Scoundrel? I mentioned that.
I have not seen that one.
I mean, you can imagine who plays the scoundrel
Yes,
in the
it's
movie.
been on my list for a while. It's one of those ones that's like on Tubi and it comes up and then I think, oh, it's November, I'm gonna do it, and then of course
Right.
I don't.
I wanted to see it because it's only one of two films that he did with his brother, and they play, because I mean, they obviously in the Falcon series, he literally hands the series over to him. They're both in one of the movies, but in Death of a Scoundrel, they're both in it. They play brothers, and George, not to ruin it, but it's because it's open at the beginning, but like the one brother basically ruins the life of the other brother. It just feels like, wow, okay, there's some subtext here about these two I don't know about. And it's an interesting movie because it's about a guy, George Sanders, who comes to America and rises through the tiers of society through the stock market. And that could be the subject of, it could sound a little boring. I actually found it to be quite interesting because it's just an unusual setting. You just don't generally see movies like that where he's cutting corners and he's cutting people out and he's doing all this. And of course, as he's doing it, he's making more and more enemies as he goes. And it opened, I'm not spoiling anything, it opens with him dead under the title card, Death of a Scoundrel. And then it winds back to say how he did it. I actually enjoyed it quite a bit. And he is rotten to the core in that movie. It's one of the perfect thing for him.
I will get, everybody has a watch list 100 movies long, but I do. I'm sure it's short too because of the era, so that should be easy to get to. No, the one I rewatched for our conversation was Village of the Damned. I'd seen it, but it had been many, many years since I've seen it. And I actually kind of forgot that he was in it. And then I was looking through the list. And because horror movies are my main genre, as you can see, the Frankenstein and Mummy behind me. I really, it's good. It's very
Oh
good.
yeah, it's held to holds up, yeah.
And it is, if there, it is a bit of a, it does kind of play into him being this sort of professorial intellectual type, but also kind of a little bit against type too, as he's kind of a wife guy as well, and which is not something maybe you expect from him. And it's, yeah, I really, I when we get to the movie we're going to talk about, I have a very healthy sort of Anglophile streak that to my cinema taste as well, and so I like that sort of, weird British sci-fi is always fun for me. So I highly recommend Village of the Damned. And those kids are creepy, and creepy
Oh,
kids, who
yeah,
doesn't
creepy.
like creepy kids?
To my memory, there is no parallel character in the remake. I don't think there is like a George Sanders-esque type in the Carpenter remake, and that's what it's one of the
I'm
few
not.
John Carpenter movies that's not any good because I saw it in the theater and it was dull as dishwater, and I was like, what happened,
I maybe watched it, back in the day on VHS, but it's one of the few John Carpenter movies that I would say, I haven't seen. So maybe I'll just leave it at that. Maybe I'll not watch that one.
It's really, really boring. And like I said, I saw it once in a theater, and you're talking 35 years ago, but when I'm thinking of it, I'm like, yeah, there's Christopher Reeve is in it and Christy Alley, but like there is no George Sanders' type, which kind of gets back to what we were talking about. Like it was a type that eventually Hollywood just got rid of because they stopped making so many movies. They went from 100 movies a year to, nine, and you just didn't have that room for that kind of character. I watched a movie he did with Barbara Stanwyck called Witness to Murder, which is the shortest way I can describe that is it's a B Rear Window. Okay. It's just a cheaper Rear Window
I
where.
feel like I may have seen that this at some point in my late night watchings of Turner Classic Movies.
Barbara Stanwyck sees a murder in the apartment across the way, and it's committed by George Sanders, and she's trying to get all the cops to believe her,
Yes,
and
I
no
have
one,
seen this. I have seen this.
and no one believes her because George Sanders is this renowned author. Again, he's always
Okay.
playing authors, right? Because you buy that, right? Of course he's an
Yeah.
author. Why wouldn't he be? But he's a renowned author, and all the police are deferring to him because he's a man, right? Oh, you're being hysterical. That
So
kind of thing.
now that you're talking about this movie, I have seen it, and I remember finding it so frustrating because, like, Barbara Stanwyck is always worth watching, and she's such a intense, wonderful actress. And I can remember watching this movie and just being so frustrated for her that
Right.
these men will not listen. And it's like, if Barbara cannot get them to listen, like, what hope is there for the rest of us?
I mean, they defer to the cops keep deferring to him. Not that that's not realistic, but it's frustrating to watch, as you say, because you're just like, he comes up with the most contrived excuses as to why is there blood on the carpet? Why is the drapes torn? And he comes up with something, and the cops are like, oh, okay, yeah, that's fine. And you're like, oh, come on.
I feel like it might be a little realistic.
Yeah, it's probably very realistic, but it's not necessarily fun to watch
Yes.
exactly. So, and unfortunately, in that movie, like the police officer that she teams up with that eventually believes her, Barbara kind of disappears by the end of that movie. Like she gets physically threatened by George Sanders, and like the cop comes in and saves her. And it's a little like, oh, shouldn't Barbara Stanwyck be the one that like ends this? She's the star. She's gonna get pushed off to the side. So it was like. Yeah, it's like a B Rear Window. If you want to watch a B Rear Window, that you
You
could watch Witness to Murder.
just walk through a window, yeah.
One thing I mentioned this in the previous episode we did of Fade Out on Edward G. Robinson, and I want to mention it here because it comes up again. He did have a memorable turn in the 60s on two episodes of Batman. We generally just talk about movies here, but when I was a kid, Batman was a absolutely foundational show. And in a lot of ways, that show was a gateway, kind of you were talking about the Disney films. The Batman TV show was a gateway for me to many older actors. And he's the first Mr. Freeze.
Okay.
And he plays it with a German accent for no particular reason, but it's fine. And those are great episodes because it's an ambitious character to do because unlike the Joker or the Riddler or the Catwoman, Mr. Freeze is a more sci-fi. He's got a freeze gun and he has to live in this permanent kind of freeze chamber, and they have to like put heat rays on his henchmen. And so it probably took a little more of the budget to do, and he's terrific in it. Like I wish that he had come back as Mr. Freeze, but they replaced him with Otto Preminger, which is like I
Okay.
guess the Batman crew was like, how can we make this harder on ourselves? Let's get Otto Preminger in
That is
here.
a big swing between two different types of men.
It's like, was Klaus Kinski busy? I mean, like, what's happening? But anyway, he's terrific as Mr. Freeze in the two episodes. He's in the very first season, and he's absolutely great in that. So, okay, what other one from like around the 60s or something have you watched?
I think this is actually fit back to the 50s again. The other
Okay.
one that I watched was While the City Sleeps, which is a really, really great film noir that has, again, sort of a real ensemble cast of people playing different newspaper writers who are trying to help track down this serial killer. And it's one of those movies that's from, late 50s, and it sort of, you can feel the movie moving towards maybe a more modern type of cinema. It's still tied to classic Hollywood, but the scenes with the killer are actually quite disturbing, and it feels sort of like a proto Psycho in some ways, or proto, newspaper Zodiac or something. It's he and he has everyone in it has kind of a small role because all the characters are sort of working together, but he plays one of the newspaper men who is, very cutthroat about wanting to become the new chief editor. But it's a really, really great movie. Again, maybe for somebody who doesn't watch a lot of classic movies, it feels very modern. Ida Lupino is in it. She's somebody who's kind of dating him at first, but ends up sort of playing her own game to get ahead in the newspaper business and help find this killer. Vincent Price is in it. It's just really a great sort of workplace noir that has a lot of hints of what's to come in crime cinema.
I've never seen that. I'll have to, I'm aware of it, but I've never seen it. So I will have to check that out.
It's
So.
very entertaining too. Like, it just because you have so many characters, it just sort of moves really quickly. And Ida Lupino is amazing in it, as always.
Oh, that sounds really cool. I tried to watch, I put in my notes the parentheses almost next to this title. I tried to watch From the Earth to the Moon, the Jules Verne adaptation, and I am a sucker for those kind of like steampunk Jules Verne, like 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea
Okay.
or First Missile on the Moon, all that, like they're all in color. Sometimes they're done by like George Pal, and they're like they get all these old-timey actors, and this stars Joseph Cotten, who I love, and it's got George Sanders, and I'm like, oh wow, Joseph Cotten and George Sanders in like a Jules Verne adaptation, done. Unfortunately, that movie is completely unavailable, except it's on, it was on one of the free channels, the you know, the ad ones. I think it was Tubi, maybe I watched it on. And the print was so bad that
Tubi can do that
I
sometimes.
couldn't watch it. I'm generally not that picky. If I really just want to see something just to have taken it in, I'll watch something on YouTube and it's like, oh, this is a 480 DP, you know, transfer. But this print was so bad. And then you interspersed all the commercials. And after like 20 minutes, I just gave up. I was like, I can't, this is like watching a movie through an ice cube. I just can't, so
We're
I have
so
to,
spoiled. We're so spoiled. I
we
mean,
really
I
are.
can remember watching movies on like a 9-inch black and white TV
Yeah.
that was portable, around
Right.
the house. And now, yes, I only want my projector or giant screen.
If I can't get
The
my
one that got
Twilight
away.
Time Blu-ray, I'm not gonna watch it. Right. Yeah. So.
Well, the one that got away for me was the I've never seen The House of Seven Gables with him and Vincent Price, and they're two of my favorite actors in a Poe adaptation, and it was really hard to find a copy, and I thought, well, I'll just order a DVD, and then that didn't happen in time. So I've got that one
Okay.
waiting for me.
Okay. So I mentioned in the intro that like the Village of the Damned is kind of, first of all, that's the last decade of his career, basically. He lives until 1972, but like that's when you see the genre stuff really starting to pile up, where he's doing many, many more kind of cheaper films, and he's like fifth lead. And knowing what I know about him, again, having read it, it makes me feel even more of like he must have just been like, ugh, all right, I'll just take a check for some of these. Because like he's in a movie called The Body Stealers about aliens that are kidnapping pilots. And
I
so
mean, I think that happened to so many actors of that time. Some of them really, your Joan Crawford, she gives it her all up to the bitter end, and
Trog.
other people find work in TV, and they do other things. But unfortunately, I do think a lot of them kind of just needed the paycheck, and they keep going, and you can see that they're not having fun with it or seeing the sort of ways that they could, I guess, we have hagsploitation with the actresses of that time, and then now it's just this genre that people talk about. And a lot of those actresses gave just absolutely amazing performances in those 60s movies. And you don't quite, I mean, there were actors being, I think, asked similar things, but you don't see them really giving it their all in the same way that some of the actresses did.
Yeah, I watched, he's in Jess Franco's The Girl from Rio, which is this kind of like mod sex comedy spy thriller. And it's, oh my God, first of all, it was probably like one of six films Jess Franco made that week or something. And like, there's like a girl in a bikini draped all over George Sanders. And, he's like, 70 when he made it. And I can only think he must have been like, I did movies with Bette Davis. Like, what am I doing here? You know what I mean? Like this
And
is.
I do think there is that, for him, the 60s and the 70s, I mean, his type of guy is just not what's desired in, it's not cool, it's not,
Yep.
they are going for these new, I think you can really see that in Psychomania, that you yes, he's old and tired, clearly in that movie, but also that's a movie that's very much trying to, I think, steal some Easy Rider vibes for the British the British youth leading the movie and trying to, be manly in this new way. And so I think he had that, going against him as well.
One other one I want to mention before we, if we can, if you want to, we can get to Psychomania. But one other one I want to mention is that he did another sci-fi movie. It's one of his absolute last movies called Doom Watch, which is a sci-fi movie. Now that is based, it's a British movie. It's based on a British TV show that I was completely unfamiliar with. But the premise of Doom Watch is it's this team of British investigators who go and investigate like environmental disasters. Now, of course, that sounds really maybe boring or depressing, but apparently all the episodes are like a sci-fi horror thing.
So
So
it's
all, yeah,
Torchwood.
right, yeah, and it's like X-Files. It's
Yeah.
basically, you know, and they made a movie, and apparently the movie among Doom Watch fans is not regarded highly because they sidelined the actors from the show are in the movie, but they're all tertiary characters, and they wrote in two new characters to be the leads. Which is very strange. I could imagine if you're a Doom Watch fan and you see they're making a Doom Watch movie, and then you're like, "Who the hell are these people?" But George Sanders is in it very briefly. But it's actually pretty good. I actually, it's you know, it you got to go by the 1970 standards. It's certainly not terribly exciting. It's not very gory or anything. It doesn't have a lot of action. But I actually found it to be relatively kind of creepy and unsettling, and better than I thought it would be. So.
It sounds like something that, I mean, I'm very in. I love the Hammer films. I like all that, those AIP.
Yes.
Like I am not scared of a low budget cheesy British
It
movie.
yes, it's AIP Amicus. That like
Okay, perfect,
that level
perfect.
of kind of
That's
thing.
I if I see AIP or Amicus when I start a movie, I know that I'm going to be happy with
There
it.
you go. All right. So, well, you mentioned Psychomania. So that's his last film. I mentioned that he committed suicide. He had a, you know, you mentioned that he was married at different times to two different Gabor sisters, which is kind of amazing to think, right? And apparently he had had some personal dealings that left him very despondent. He had lost a bunch of money. He again, we don't try to get into the personal lives too much on the show because it's not really relevant, but what it sounds like it happened was that he got married to someone else. He was married to the second Gab Magda, I think Magda
Magda, yeah.
Gabor, for like 2 months or something. And
Yeah.
then he got married to this other woman, and she, for some reason, convinced him to. He had this home apparently in like Majorca or
Yeah,
something.
I somewhere in sort of in the sub
This
Mediterranean.
beautiful palatial estate, and he loved it. And for some reason, like she talked him into selling it, and he did, and he became, and then they broke up, and he became incredibly despondent, and you know, just felt like, well, what's the point in life at any way? And so he checks into this hotel. Apparently, he did a movie with David Niven in the 40s where he told David Niven, because David Niven mentions this in his biography, Bring On the Empty Horses, that George Sanders said, I'll probably kill myself when I'm in my 60s. And that's exactly what he did. And the note he left was, "Dear world, I am leaving because I am bored. I feel like I have lived long enough. I am leaving you with your worries in this sweet cesspool. Good luck." Which is like the most George Sandersy suicide note you could possibly
You can
imagine.
hear his voice, like, those, yeah, you can hear
"Dear
it.
world."
Yeah. But it's, yeah, I mean, it is, it's. Yeah, it is a tragic story, but it does seem to, like, it's very theatrical. It's droll. It's, I guess if you're gonna go, you staying true to yourself is the way to do it.
It's kind of an FU, right? Like, I leave the rest of you to the cesspool. You know, I'm going on to something better. Okay, George. All right. So he commits suicide after he finishes this film, and then it becomes his last film. So I mentioned now you can find this film in two different forms, either as Psychomania or The Death Wheelers. Which do you prefer as a title, Laura?
I mean, the Death Wheelers is probably a more accurate title, but I will say that the poster of the skull with the sort of bike helmet over it and the word psychomania is a very, like, that's probably like my first memory. Like, I kept seeing this movie recommended to me and seeing that poster. I was like, this movie looks amazing. So I have an affection for Psychomania, but if you watch the movie, The Death Wheelers makes a lot more sense as the title of the movie.
Yeah, that exactly. Psychomania is like classier, but the Death Wheelers is more, it's more B movie
Yeah.
title, but it is more descriptive because you're like, okay, it's about a
Absolutely.
biker gang. So I'm gonna mention to everybody who hasn't seen this movie, it's available. You can find it on, it is streaming. You can find it on YouTube in several different forms. It was released in March 1973. So the plot, very briefly, the plot is Tom Latham is the head of a biker gang called the Living Dead, which includes his girlfriend Abby. Tom dabbles in black magic, as does his mother and her butler Shadwell, who holds seances in her home while worshiping a frog god. Instigated to do so by his mother, Tom commits suicide so he can be brought back to life via black magic, making him immortal. One by one, all the members of the biker gang do the same, except for Abby, allowing him to run rampant through the town. After Tom kills a policeman, his mother turns on him and denounces her worship of the frog god. Using Abby, she sets a trap for him. George Sanders plays the butler, Shadwell, fantastic name. Nikki Henson is Tom. Beryl Reed is Mrs. Latham, his mother, and Mary Larkin plays Abby. The film was directed by Don Sharp, who did movies like Kiss of the Vampire, Rasputin the Mad Monk, and The Face of Fu Manchu, which are, that's a Christopher Lee movie, and then Rasputin the Mad Monk was a Hammer film. Okay, thoughts about, had you seen The Death Wheelers before you recommended it for the show?
I had not.
Oh, okay.
I had heard of it because I love folk horror in particular. And w many, many decades ago, when I was a college student, I spent a year living in England, and I watched The Wicker Man, and it changed my life and burned itself into my brain. And so I have always loved, spent a lot of time exploring British folk horror Hammer movies. And so sometimes it's the name of this movie, it would come up in like an article or a list of things that, although it predates The Wicker Man, they were,
It
it
does.
was
That's right.
made,
Yeah.
yeah, they came out in the same year, but this was made earlier. So I had heard of it, but I hadn't actually watched it. And I mean, I will say, like, and this maybe is the best part, the opening scene of this movie with the motorcycles going around sort of the Stonehenge rocks. I was like, this is amazing. It doesn't quite live up to that initial image, but there's a lot, I think, again, I'm an art curator. I spend a lot of time looking at images as professionally and teaching and analyzing images. So I definitely have a weakness for movies that have evocative imagery, even if the rest of the parts don't add up in the way that they should. And I think the visuals in this movie, I really, there's all these sort of interesting plays between sort of old, like this folklore or these, and then like just 70s, early 70s Britain, which is the least glamorous thing. Like there's no, there's nothing stereotypical sort of gothic Britain in this movie. It's like a shopping mall in the
Yeah,
70s
right. Right.
and the ugliest clothes you've ever seen. One of the bikers' name is Bertram, which cracked me up the first time. Like it is this very, and where I lived in England was in Northern England, which was also very industrial and looks, some of those towns still look like the way the town in this movie looks. So I just like that it's like trying to be cool with this biker thing. They clearly watched Rosemary's Baby. There's a little of that in there. But they're trying to roll it into this sort of tradition of folk horror and maybe nods to even some of the Hammer movies. It doesn't quite add up, but it is very fun. And some of the visual, that frog is, random frog
I love the frog
as
god.
a plot device in that, yeah, comes back. The art and the way that the mother's apartment is decorated, like just absolutely over the top psychedelic 60s type stuff. So I really, and then I watched it actually more than once.
I did too. Yeah.
And I still enjoyed it. So I can see this becoming like a weird comfort movie for me.
I really love the biker helmets that they give them with this kind of skull-like
Yeah.
eyes, visors. Like, that's a great visual, right? That just looks really cool.
It really does.
It
They're
is.
the girlfriend's biker outfit though, like the second time especially, like you have this amazing cool biker chick Jane in the movie who's like got a red patent leather jacket and go-go boots, and she's beautiful and she is really down with the whole killing ourselves and becoming evil thing. And then there's the girlfriend who has a corduroy jacket with her name on
With her
it, like
name in
it's so.
cursive, like it's Laverne DeFazio or
It's
something.
so lame. Yes, it's so lame. And I'm,
Abby.
yes, it's like, how did she become a part of this biker gang? But I love that about it. Like, they're just these sort of things that don't quite add up to a biker gang or any sort of coolness at all. And yet, here we are, like, killing ourselves in hilarious ways and in a montage and summoning the devil.
I love that. Obviously, this is made by, I mentioned the director Don Sharpen. This is a movie made by older guys, right? Old British guys. So they're trying to approach the counterculture as best they know how, but they probably don't really know the counterculture because these guys are
I
probably
don't think
all
so.
in their 60s and they're just sort of like what they hear. So it's like these guys are bikers, but they're also hippies. But as far as I no, it's not like I lived through that era, but like those two things didn't really mix. Like they were two
One of
distinctive
them
groups.
literally has a folk band. Like he literally has a guitar with gigs where he's like singing hippie songs.
And when Tom dies at his funeral, they have like a guy doing "I Gave My Love a Cherry" type song.
Yes.
And it's like, wait, those are not bike. That's not a biker funeral. What are you talking? What's going on? So it's like, it's older guys that are like, well, bikers and hippies are all the same, right? No. No, they're absolutely two very distinct groups, but here they kind of slosh back and forth. And so one of the things I had read about in the making of this, because I mentioned Nicky Henson is sort of the star, plays Tom Latham. He was in movies like Witchfinder General and There's a Girl in My Soup. He apparently did this movie, as a lot of actors do, for the paycheck because he was so sure that no one was going to see it. That he could just make the money and it'll never surface again. And anyone who has done any level of film historian work for even 10 minutes knows there are dozens, if not hundreds, of movies littered across people's careers who's featuring an actor who say, "I did it for the money. No one was ever going to see it, and now it's the thing. No, that's the thing I'm known for more than anything else." So it's like if you're an actor and you think this cheap project I'm going to do will never be seen. It'll guarantee that's the thing you're going to be signing at conventions 30 years from now. So don't do it for that reason if that's the reason you're going to do it. Because
I
Nicky
don't
Henson has
think
said
he's
that's
that
the
bad
movie
in the
nobody.
movie.
No, it's not a bad movie, but he's just sort of like, that's all anybody. That he's still being asked about it when he thought it would just be something you would do for 3 weeks and forget about. It's like, Nicky, don't. That's the bad reason to do it. I want to mention Mary Larkin just because Mary Larkin was in. The Razor's Edge, which is my favorite book of all time. She's in the Bill Murray version. I don't remember her in that movie, but she's in it. And she's in another movie. And I like to mention this movie every time it comes up simply because of the name. It is a Richard Harris movie called The Internecine Project. I have no idea what this movie's about. I think it's a thriller, but I love the idea that they could make a movie with that word in it and think people were going to go see it. The
Didn't know what
internecine.
it
You asked 100 people what that word means. I think
was.
maybe you'd get one who knows what that word means. I just love that it was called the internecine project. It's sort of like aggressively uncommercial, I just absolutely love it. So the biker gang at the beginning of this film, they are kind of just nuisances, right? They're like the Bowery Boys in that like the destruction that they cause in the
Oh,
town.
yeah.
Except,
When
well, they kill that guy in the beginning. There is that.
they do kill the guy in the beginning, and then the part where they sort of rampage through the shopping mall.
That's after they all die and they've come
Yes,
back.
they do get worse, and they run over the baby in the
They kill a
carriage. I'm
baby in a crib.
a baby.
Because like in the middle they're like running over guys on ladders and it's all very comical and you're like, these guys are just kind of like, this is not really a biker gang. And then once they come back as the undead, then they become stone cold murderers because that woman you mentioned, she runs a baby down in a supermarket with her motorcycle. Like, wow.
Yeah, and they all sort of like look at each other before it happens, like, yep, we're going for the baby. But yeah, even before in the beginning of the movie, they cause a car accident that either maims or kills a guy,
They
and
do that. That's right. Yeah, they do that.
we
So.
don't ever sort of see hear anything about what they actually like want, other than, you know, to be bad or to
Just cause mayhem.
play their folk music and drive around Stonehenge in their with their motorcycles. There also isn't like really ever any clues where in England they're supposed to be, I don't think. Like, it's you get a sense that it's a smaller baby city, and it certainly looks like what a lot of smaller cities in. But then you've got this stone circle, which those are sort of distinct to one part. So it does sort of end up reading as like England, like that, you know, there's no real sense of place, but the sense of time in the movie, again, I really like this. Like, you just don't see that sort of side of England in movies of that era. Often you are seeing costume. When people think about British films, they often think about costume dramas, or they think about the Hammer films, or they think about more prestige movies in one way or the other. And so, what one of the things I love about that whole rampaging through the marketplace is it's not only that it's a rampaging through the marketplace, but like the people are just like, they're wearing hideous clothes and they look like regular people. And it's so clearly like late 60s, early 70s, like the hanging on of the late 60s and the 70s fashion. And they're in this sort of ugly industrial sort of area that's an open air mall. And it, you know, that is certainly part of, you know, all countries have their less scenic sides, but we just don't see that. You know, Britain is, I mean, a lot of Americans think of Britain as how it's presented in TV and movies, and this
Right.
sort of masterpiece theater version of what England is like. And this is a much sort of a taste of a different side of England and from a different era. You know, obviously when you get later, you get the 90s and Mike Leigh and things like that, of sort of grittier British dramas. But for this era, it just feels great to see that run-of-the-mill shopping
Right.
area.
Right. It's like it's in American films. England is either London or Downton Abbey, right? You know, it's
Exactly,
like that's it.
exactly.
Those are the only two kinds of
And
places
there's
in
a
England. Like,
whole lot
no,
in between.
there's a lot of rural towns, you know, and stuff like that. Actually, this
Yeah,
was.
and like mid-sized cities too, like ugly. Like, this feels like it was filmed in like, you know, one of these sort of more industrial cities that had to be rebuilt after the war. So everything looks kind of weird and brutalist in some ways.
It's true. I love that when they bury Tom. When he dies, they bury him in a, you know, they have the plot and they bury him on his bike. So he's sitting up in his bike as they're burying him,
Yeah, the
and his head
proportions
actually doesn't clear
look.
the ground. Like his head is a full half foot above the 6 foot plot. I love that they just got him sitting there like that. I thought that was really funny. And like,
I
so.
laughed at that because before that, she goes to ask his mom, like, we would like to bury him in our special way. And then it just cuts to him sitting on the bike in the ground. And you can obviously tell that his head is going to be above ground
Gonna sit
level.
like that, right? Yeah, the top of his helmet is gonna stick out. And then when the rest of the bikers decide to kill themselves, they don't just like kill them. They don't just shoot themselves or like die of a drug overdose. They kill themselves in particularly comical ways. Like one guy puts a rock around his neck and drops himself into another one jumps out of a plane. Like they do it in the silliest way imaginable. And I was sort of like, I guess this is. Yeah, this is supposed to be funny. I'm not supposed to take this seriously because
It has some
why would you
serious
do all
monologue.
this? You know, so.
Which I do think that if the movie had leaned into that vibe a little bit more, it would actually be improved. I think that it needs a little more camp or a little more just like silliness to really be a cut above what it ends up being, because it doesn't maintain that sort of fun, sense of fun through the ending.
Yeah, I do love the frog pendant that you see over and over again. The
Yes.
little like you know what's it like a clay you know thing that they've made, and it's got a little frog on it. And they never explain why it's a frog god. Like it's just.
I guess I thought once, now that I watched it the second time, is so he finds the frog in the cemetery at the
Right.
beginning, when and then he brings it home and they tell him you shouldn't do that because it's a spirit. So I didn't know if maybe the frog was supposed to be Satan or his father or both, Because it's sort of unclear if is Satan his father, because they say the husband of his mother went in and disappeared in this
Right.
sort of frog room. So yeah, it's pretty vague exactly what the frog or who the frog is, but it's a good visual.
Yeah, oh, it's one. I love the big when he's the giant frog and he's sort of half transparent. He's got like a ghost frog. I love all that stuff because you're just like, what the hell is this? Now, we haven't really talked about George Sanders in this movie at all. Now, I mentioned he plays Shadwell, which is Tom's mother's butler. And you kind of know, even though I had watched other movies of his and he was in smaller and smaller roles in these other movies, you don't get George Sanders. First of all, he gets top billing in the movie. You don't get George Sanders to play a butler unless there's more to him than you think. And obviously we find out that he's got a lot more going on behind the scenes with the mother and her satanic rituals than just being the butler. And even his name, Shadwell, just has shady. It sounds shady. The name itself just sounds. And so he ends up figuring larger into the movie. And like I was mentioning earlier, I'm trying to imagine what he thought of while he was making this movie, right? Where he's talking about the frog god. He must have been like, what he what am what is this? What am I doing?
He does get to wear the really excellent costume at the end.
The big
I
cape and
really
stuff,
love
yeah.
the shot of the end where he's walking from the car
Yeah.
to the survivor, and wearing this really great, sort of finely to his stature sort of satanic outfit. I do think he just doesn't seem, his voice is, he has, they give him some of the sort of droll lines, but you can tell that his voice is softer and he looks, a bit more frail than even movies that are fairly close to that. But I get what they were looking for in the part from him. I do see how it makes sense as a George Sanders role.
Yeah.
And he does, there's a couple moments where he, fires off a one-liner or a quip, or the scene where he's sort of yelling at the people who want to pay for, where he's presented with the cross and he's trying to sort of refuse the cross. I think there's a couple of times where you see a little bit of the old spark there. And the scenes with him and the mother are good. The actress that plays the mother is quite good as well in this movie.
Yeah. I mentioned Beryl Reed as Mrs. Latham. She was in movies like Doctor and the Devils, Dr. Fibes Rises Again, and the Inspector Clouseau movie, which is the rarely seen Inspector Clouseau movie from the 60s with Alan Arkin as Inspector Clouseau, not Peter Sellers. But that was like a one-off that they tried and it didn't work, but she's in that movie. He's her, she is his boss, but she's you just because of his George Sandersness. You know that there's more going on that than he's letting her in on. He's manipulating her just by the way you can tell by the way he's talking to her. And we find out, as you mentioned, like he's at the end, he's the last scene in the movie. And so we find out that there's a lot more going on. And again, that's why you get George Sanders to kind of play what seems like a tiny part. And he's bouncing off Nikki Henson, who's big in this movie. He's got a lot of energy and he's yelling a lot and he's like picking girls up in bars and doing all this, crazy stuff. And he's playing up against Sanders, who's kind of, as you're doing the typical George Sanders, quiet, okay, Tom. Like he's kind of like manipulate everything behind the scenes. So you could see why they would reach out to George Sanders for a movie like that. It does feel like a George Sanders' kind of part.
Absolutely.
So, and it's, would you recommend this movie? Let's put it that way. Would you, I mean, obviously not to everybody, but
Yeah,
to like
I
horror fans who haven't seen it, would
absolutely.
you recommend it?
If you are a fan of cult movies, horror movies, or like a bit of a sort of odd gem, I absolutely would recommend it. And especially if you like folk horror and that era, I think that you can sort of see what they're going for. You can see, we saw these movies and we're going to put this little element of it in this, like of a little bit of Easy Rider, a little bit of Rosemary's Baby, a little bit of the goth scenes of, there's a nice foggy opening like the Hammer movies. So I think if you have a predilection for any of those things, you'll find something to enjoy here.
I would say the same. And it was funny when I was watching it, I thought about like, what would I pair this up with? Like if I was doing a, a programming one night, what would I and you mentioned the Wicker Man, and you could sort of see it with the Wicker Man because it's got, you know, the kind of folk horror thing, although this movie goes for much more gonzo when like people turn to stone, which is kind of amazing. But
Yeah. Oh,
like,
yeah, I guess. Yeah.
I actually, in a weird
The
way,
Wicker
I
Man is so good. That's maybe a little
yeah,
unbalanced.
right. Well, that's exactly. So the one oddly I thought of pairing up with was Edgar Wright's Hot Fuzz, because Edgar Wright, Hot Fuzz takes place in a similar kind of town, right? It's kind of like the more rural part of England.
Absolutely. I think
They're
there's no chance that Edgar Wright had didn't see this movie.
Oh
Like,
yeah,
I
this feels like an
literally,
Edgar
like,
Wright thing that he would
yeah.
enjoy. Totally. And they both feature prominent scenes in a supermarket, which, if you just want to be very surface about it, they both feature big scenes in a supermarket. But it has, they're similar settings tonally. As we mentioned, Psychomania's got some comedy in it. Hot Fuzz is actually much more of a comedy. They're not similar films, but in some ways, I think they kind of complement each other. And unlike you, like you just said with Wicker Man, it's not as imbalanced. I mean, Hot Fuzz is a much better movie, obviously, but it's Wicker Man and Psychomania would really be disjointed if you went from one to the other. So,
Yes, please. If you've got to choose and you haven't seen The Wicker Man, watch
go
that.
see the Wicker Man. Yeah.
But I do think this is, yeah, it is fun, and it there's a lot. If you were doing like a B movie, or I also think it, you know, because the visuals are so fun. Like if you're having a Halloween party or it could be a very fun party movie that you can kind of come in and out of or have
Yes.
in the background. It's got that great like cheesy 70s music like score in it. I think that it would be a fun like get together with friends and let's just see what, you know, we all are going to talk to the screen and enjoy this movie.
Right. You go to get, you know, some chips, and you come back and you're like,
Exactly.
what is this giant frog? What did I miss? There's a giant
Yeah.
frog now. All right. It's
Exactly.
PG, everybody, by the way. It's not
Yes.
violent in any way, other than it's got all this death in it, but it's all very cartoony. So yeah, it would be kind of a fun kind of thing. And, you know, I was, you know, when I've been, you know, doing the show and examining people's final films, and I'm always sort of curious, like, how do they, even within the film itself, how do they go out? Are they in it a little bit? Are they in it a lot? And I sort of like that his last movie, he's the last person in it. He's the
And he
last.
looks cool. He looks
Yeah.
very cool in that scene.
Yeah. So it's kind of nice. So that is going to springboard perfectly into what my exit question for you was going to be, because it's connected to that. You know, George Sanders took himself off of life stage while he was still in his 60s. He removed himself from life. And so he could have, who knows how long he could have kept living. And so the question I had for you was, what film made post 1972, what would have liked to have seen him in if he hadn't done that terrible thing, if he had decided to stick it out and maybe, you know, get some help or something and not choose to kill himself. What, I mean, it's so grim to talk about that, but I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah.
But what movie you think maybe in the 70s, or maybe if he had lived into the early 80s, what could you have pictured him in? And you would have been like, that would have been fun to see him in X.
I really had a hard time with this because, again, I think he is like when I think about him in his prime, and then you think about the movies of the 70s, it's such a disconnect. Like, you don't put George Sanders in a Scorsese movie, or, you know, you don't like he does it, you know, maybe a Bond villain, but so I started to think like, okay, where does he fit? Like, if time and space are of no consequence, like where what would I what movies that have come out or what roles could I potentially see him in? I think that the character of Belloc in Raiders of the Lost Ark is very George Sanders coded. And so if you could bring prime George Sanders into 1981, I think he would have made an amazing Belloc. And I think that I would think that Steven Spielberg would probably that's maybe how that character ended up that way. One, I always wish they'd not killed Belloc so he could show up again in other movies. I love that character, so
Oh,
maybe
he's
that's
great. One of the great
why
movie villains of all
they
time.
don't kill him. And I yeah, he has that same sort of suave menace. You understand why Marion wants to stay and maybe have a drink with him, even though she's kind of escaping, but he's seems like a fun guy to have some wine with too. So I think that, and this is a bit of a curveball, but the more I've thought about it, the more I like it. I think that George Sanders could have played Royal Tannenbaum.
if he had somehow gotten in a
If
time
he,
machine
again,
and
somehow
lived
had a
to
time machine.
2006 or whatever it was when they made
Yeah.
that movie.
I mean, I love Gene Hackman, but I could see again that like smartest guy in the room, bored by everyone, but also sort of, looking for some connection. I think he could have played Royal Tannenbaum.
That would have been amazing. That would be really. Can you imagine growing up with him? Oh, that would be terrifying.
I mean, all those kids are messed up for a reason.
I love that. That idea is Belloc. That's really interesting, right? I could just picture him talking down to,
Oh, yeah.
just talking, you'd be waiting 1,000 years, even you will be worth something, that kind of thing. It
Exactly.
would have
He
been
could
absolutely
deliver
amazing.
all those lines convincingly.
That's a great pick. Now, I don't always have an answer for my own question. Sometimes I just come up with a question and I want to ask the guest, but I did come up with one as I was writing the questioning and sending it to you. And it's kind of funny. You mentioned Raiders. I kind of stayed in that same ballpark, and then I pictured him potentially. And again, this is never to besmirch the actor that did play the part.
Yes,
This
yes.
is just fanciful of like, oh, why did you know, in another world, that actor didn't get the part. Maybe George Sanders could have done it. I could have pictured him as Grand Moff Tarkin in Star Wars
I
because
mean,
Peter Cushing is such an irredeemable jerk. I mean, he's just a murderer. I could see George Sanders just being like, telling the Death Star commander, "You may fire when ready." Like, I could totally see
I
George
mean,
Sanders
they,
doing that.
they, that does make sense. They aren't, wildly off base as ages. They certainly made similar movies. I think it's so fun, that people our age, off probably Grand Moff Tarkin is the first time you see Peter Cushing. And now, like when I always have such a crush on Peter Cushing in the Hammer movies. Like he is always like he has this great sort of sweetness and tenderness to him in his earlier roles. And so, yeah, maybe Sanders would have been a little bit more evil. Like now, when I watch Grand Moff Tarkin, I'm like, but he's Van Helsing. I do. I agree with that. I think that works. And I think that generation, George Lucas, Steven Spielberg, they would have known that archetype. They knew that character because they were such movie heads.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, well, Laura, I thank you so much for doing this. I was just really excited to get to talk to you, and I love it when someone throws me. I mean, as I mentioned, like virtually every episode, I let the guest pick the subject, and so it's always interesting and revealing about who they pick. And this one was like a super curveball, and I had never seen Death Wheelers, and I'm now glad that I have. And I've seen a bunch of really interesting, different movies, thanks to George Sanders being part of them. So, thank you so much for doing this. It was just an absolute blast to talk to you.
Thank you for having me. It was very fun, and I hope that people check out some George Sanders movies from whatever era they're going for.
Absolutely. Why don't you tell people where they can find you out on the internets if you are so inclined?
Yep. So I am just under my name, Laura Burkhalter, on Blue Sky and on Instagram. I post lots of museum life and art life things on Instagram. And then I also am on Letterboxd under my name too. And I do try to log and maybe throw out a sassy one-liner about most movies that I watch. So I can be found there just under my real name, but with a picture of Elvira
Okay.
as my avatar. So lots of horror movies in there. So if you're into art or museum life or horror movies, I'm at those places.
Very cool. I didn't know you were on Letterboxd, so I will have to follow you as soon as we get off here, and I'll find you on there. Do you write reviews, or you just do star ratings? Because I just don't have the energy to write reviews. I just do star ratings.
I usually just fire off like a real quick one or two lines because most of the time, everything that's been said is going to be said. Unless something like really enrages me or I really love it, I tend to be a little bit more jokey about it. But I do try to log everything just for my own reasons. So you can definitely sort of see what weird corners of the movie world I'm getting into.
Perfect, bro. I think I gave Psychomania 3 stars
I
on
think that's what I
Letterboxd.
gave it to.
I think
I
I
think
gave
it's
it three. I think
star.
maybe 3.5, probably three. We'll have to go back and check. So anyway, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it. And thank you all for listening. Of course, you can find all the back episodes of Fade Out on fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can subscribe to the show on any podcatcher of your choice. Much like Laura, I'm over on Blue Sky under at Fade Out Pod. And finally, if you want to support the Fine Water Podcast Network, just go to patreon.com/FW Podcast. And there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So big thanks to Monique D, Donald McWaters, Mark Balbus, plus David S. Gutierrez, Gord Tolton, Al, and Mike Atchison for their support of Fade Out and the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I really appreciate it. So thank you all so much for listening. This is our almost our last show for the year. There will be a bonus episode about a non sort of atypical format episode coming a couple days after this. So check your feeds for that. But this is our last regular episode of the year. So I want to wish you all a happy new year, everybody. And we'll see you in 2026. So we'll be back with another episode in the new year. But we've reached the end of this particular skit. So for now, it's time to fade out.
Good evening. I've got a fascinating device to tell you about. Watch band called Twistoflex, made by the Spydell Corporation. Would you mind collaborating with me in a little experiment? Slip your watch off your wrist. Now, try turning it inside out like this. Don't force it. You can't do it, can you? Well, that's precisely the point. But it's easy with Twistoflex. The rigidity of your old band means all kinds of stresses and strains at wear points. None of that nonsense with Spydell's new Twistoflex. It's completely flexible, and it actually lasts five times as long as the old band's. If you've been admiring mine, I should tell you that it's the Brasilia. Magnificent, isn't it? Genuine 10-carat gold filled, only $7.95. Or, for waterproof watches, this is Aquarius in stainless steel, only $4.95. Both of them can be twisted, turned, or even tied in a knot. Twistoflex by Spydell. Fascinating.